Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Is this light function? Okay, I'll just chant the verse. Shuka Uvacha, Yang Pravrajanta Manupita Mapita Krityang Dvai Payano Viraha Katara Ajuhava Putriti Tanmayataya Taravob Hinedus Tam Sarva Bhuta Hridayam Munimanatosmi. Srila Sutta Goswami said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage, Shukadeva Goswami, who can enter the hearts of all. When he went away to take up the renounced order of life, sannyas, leaving home without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread or the ceremonies observed by the higher castes, his father Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, 'O my son!' Indeed, only the trees, which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation, echoed in response to the bereaved father." Purport. The institution of Varna and Ashram describes many regulative duties to be observed by its followers. Such duties enjoin that a candidate willing to study the Vedas must approach a bona fide spiritual master and request acceptance as his disciple. The sacred thread is the sign of those who are competent to study the Vedas from the Acharya or the bona fide spiritual master. Sri Shukadeva Goswami did not undergo such purificatory ceremonies because he was a liberated soul from his very birth. Generally, a man is born as an ordinary being, and by the purificatory processes, he is born for the second time. When he sees a new light and seeks direction for spiritual progress, he approaches a spiritual master for instruction in the Vedas. The spiritual master accepts only the sincere inquirer as his disciple and gives him the sacred thread. In this way, a man becomes twice born, or a dvija. After qualifying as a dvija, one may study the Vedas, and after becoming well-versed in the Vedas, one becomes a vipra. A vipra, or a qualified brahmana, thus realizes the absolute truth and makes further progress in spiritual life until he reaches the Vaishnava stage. The Vaishnava stage is the postgraduate status of a brahmana. A progressive brahmana must necessarily become a Vaishnava, for a Vaishnava is a self-realized learned brahmana. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was a Vaishnava from the beginning. Therefore, there was no need for him to undergo all the processes of the Varnashram institution. Ultimately, the aim of Varnashram Dharma is to turn a crude man into a pure devotee of the Lord or a Vaishnava. Anyone, therefore, who becomes a Vaishnava accepted by the first-class Vaishnava or Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava is already considered a Brahmana regardless of his birth or past deeds. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this principle and recognized Srila Haridas Thakur as the Acharya of the Holy Name, although Thakur Haridas appeared in a Mohammedan family. In conclusion, Srila Shukadeva Goswami was born a Vaishnava, and therefore Brahmanism was included in him. He did not have to undergo any ceremonies. Any low-born person, be he a Kirat, Hun, Andhra, Pulinda, Pulkash, Abhira, Shumbha, Yavana, Khasa, or even lower, can be delivered to the highest transcendental position by the mercy of Vaishnavas. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was the spiritual master of Srila Sutta Goswami, who therefore offers his respectful obeisances unto Srila Shukadeva Goswami before he begins his answers to the questions of the sages at Naimisharanya. And I shall also offer my obeisance verbally to Srila Prabhupada and all else by whose mercy we are able to sit here and discuss all these things. When we say all else, well, that the mercy of all the great personalities, which is included in the prayer, Vandeham Sri Guru, they're all included, that it's all concentrated in the personality of the guru. Therefore we say Sarva Deva Maya Guru. The guru is the representative, or all the mercy of all the great personalities are concentrated in him. Śrīla Gosvāmī offers respect to Śukadeva. He, as in the pranam mantras, you offer obeisance to someone and you describe some of the qualities by which they are obeisanceable. Ever heard that word before? Obeisanceable? Respectable. I just made it up. It's by which they are worthy of offering obeisance to. In Sanskrit, we say puja, which means respectable. They're worthy of, or they're suitable persons to be respected. Suitable of being respected. There are many word formations like that. Aradhya, one who is worthy of, similar, formal worship. A puja, we say puja, that when we say puja, we generally mean a formal system of worship, but in the most basic sense, it means respect. So there are also different words. Dhamya, worthy of being pressed down. Adamya, impossible to press down. The respect is being offered to him. Here is described his transcendental situation. He was so transcendental that he had absolutely no interest in any social formality whatsoever. And therefore, even though he was the son of Vyasadeva, and if you want to be the son of a Brahmana, that's about the highest pedigree you could get. I mean, all the different Brahmana families say that we Brahmins, we're the real high ones, and all the others, they're just all bogus. They all say that, whichever Brahmin family they may be born in. But if you're the son of Vyas, I mean, who could be a higher Brahmana than Vyas? The duty of the Brahmanas is to study the Vedas, and Vyas means, his very name means that he divides the Vedas. And that's still a Brahmana name. Vyas, surname, Brahmana surname, Vyas. It's quite common in Gujarat. Someone's called Vyas, you know they're from a Brahmin family, even if they're working in an LIC office or whatever. So Shukadev, he didn't even want to come out of the womb in the first place, because he thought it's all Maya out there. The worms here in the stomach are better association than Vyasadeva. he thought Vyasi, if I come out, then he is just going to pamper me and think, just like here, putro, putro, he called out, my son, my son. Oh. So exactly what Shukadev thought, that Vyasadeva would relate to him as a son, and that is exactly what happened. And so Shukadev, he took off completely naked, not wearing any clothes. That's a sign of complete detachment from the world, if you don't wear any clothes. Because socially, among any civilized people, it's considered uncivilized to go naked. You do see some people wandering in the streets in India even today naked, crazy people. And you do see, I saw a few years ago, maybe about 20 years ago in the Mayapur area, these what they call Adivasis or tribal people going around with their bows and arrows, and just the smallest of copins to cover their body, and that's all. And still in South India, it's fairly common. You see some workers, they just wear a copin when they're working in a field or something. And sadhus in North India, it's still acceptable to go with just a copin. Vamsidas Babaji and Gorakishore, they'd also wear just a copin. But some sadhus, they go completely naked. Here in Gujarat, sometimes, occasionally you see this Digamba Jain sadhus. Digamba means their clothing is the directions. It means they have no clothing on. So you sometimes see them walking around completely naked. And that's a sign of complete detachment from the world. I mean, you can't relate to the world in a normal way if you're naked. If you just walk into the grocery store, the Kirana Dukan, and you're just completely naked, say, well, can you give me a box of matches? And say, no, you don't have any money. You have to give me some money. There's no way to carry any money. If you're naked, where are you going to put the money? So for men and for women, even more so. We don't hear of naked women in any at all. I mean, it's considered very low class. There's that incident of... that's there in Krishna book. That who was that attacked Krishna, and Krishna turned his head because he didn't want to see the naked woman. So anyway, Shukadev, he wasn't part of the order like Naga Babas. They're an order who they go, they're a sampradaya, they go naked. But just out of his natural, total detachment from everything, he left home. And he didn't undertake the formal induction into the Brahmana class by having the sacred thread ceremony performed. He just left all these things behind. And Vyasadeva was very concerned about that. My son, if I don't, it's my duty as a father to give him all these different ceremonies and train him in studying the Vedas. So Shukadev appeared like a madman, as did Jarabharat also. He appeared like a madman. Jarabharat, formally they managed to sit him down in the ceremony and give him a thread, but he was completely detached from the world. So Shukadev was like that also, just no interest in it whatsoever. But when he came into the assembly of Parikshit and the sages, then he sat down and spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. And just as Parikshit and all the exalted personalities there could recognize that Shukadev was a great spiritual personality, so Shukadev could recognize that Parikshit was also a suitable person to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to. Then he sat down and spoke for 7 days. Then he left. It says in the 12th canto that Shukadev goes, it's like after speaking the whole Bhagavatam, you'd think there'd be some kind of recognition or something. Like if you see these Bhagavad Saptas, at the end there's a whole big thing, and then people bring umbrellas, because it says in Bhagavad Mahatmya that you have to give gifts to the speaker of umbrellas, so the speaker gets like 40 umbrellas and he takes them all back to the shop and sells them at a wholesale price. What are you going to do with 40 umbrellas? 40 umbrella and things like chadars, and they get a whole pile of all these things. People come and give gifts. But there was no such thing. Shukadev, he finished speaking, left. It's all in half a shloka. It's described how he just finished speaking and left. That's all. Spoke and left. And then Takshak came and burned Parikshit. And from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we understand that in the time between Shukadev leaving and Takshak biting Parikshit, that Uttara, the mother of Parikshit, came running up and said, "Hey, I missed the whole thing. Can you tell me?" He said, "Well, I don't have much time. Well, just tell me quickly." So he told her, he narrated the whole thing to her in a somewhat different form. So Shukadeva was completely renounced. He was on the Bhagavata platform. He was on the platform of a pure devotee. And therefore, he had no interest in any Varnashram duties. And actually, the platform of a Vaishnava is beyond Varnashram. Varnashram is supposed to raise one to the platform of a Vaishnava. But Varnashram is a social system. It takes people within the world and gives them and places people in various occupations so that according to their psychophysical propensities, or in Sanskrit terms, guna karma, karmani pravibhaktani, the four varnas are divided according to work, guna and karma. And the idea is that one is supposed to worship Krishna. Swakarmana tamabhyacha. And by doing so, siddhing vindati manavaha. By doing so, everyone can achieve perfection by worshipping Krishna according to the Varnashram system. In the Varnashram system, there is consideration of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, which, in other words, people are not always told that the real goal of life is to fully surrender to Krishna. Not everyone's ready to hear that. Most people are fools. So they are given inducements in the form of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. But this is all rejected when one actually comes to the highest platform, as in the beginning of Bhagavatam. Dharma projita kaitava atra. The dharma that is rejected from the very outset of Bhagavatam as being cheating means dharma artha kama moksha, which is the whole subject of what Vyasa had compiled in all the Vedas. That's the actually the real idea is Krishna, but a lot of it is couched in that language, and Mahabharata is certainly couched in that language. The two writings of Vyas, he compiled the Vedas and sorted them all out. And he personally wrote Mahabharata and Vedanta Sutra. Mahabharata is full of dharma, artha, and kama with a little moksha. And Vedanta Sutra is all about moksha. And actually it's all about Krishna. But most people, they don't understand that. So therefore, Vyas, he later had to compile Srimad Bhagavatam to make the point. He did everything, but he missed the real point. So Shukadeva, from the very beginning, he was on that platform. He was on the renounced. Actually, from the very beginning, he was completely renounced. He had no interest in family life. He came back long enough to hear the Bhagavatam. This is not described in Bhagavatam itself. It's described elsewhere. He came back long enough to hear the Bhagavatam. And then he left. He heard from Vyasadeva the Bhagavatam. And then he left without undergoing all the purificatory performances, the sanskaras. In this purport, in one paragraph, Srila Prabhupada paraphrases a well-known verse that Janmana Jayate Shudra Sanskara Bhavet Dvija Veda Patet Bhavet Vipra Brahmajana Titi Brahmana. That by birth everyone is equivalent to a Shudra, even people born in Brahmana families. But by Sanskara, by particularly, this refers to Upanayanam Samskara, the investiture of the sacred thread, they are known as twice born. By studying the Vedas, they become a learned scholar, which is called a Vipra, And when they actually understand the import of the Vedas, which is Brahma, the absolute truth, then they are known as a Brahmana. And the full level of understanding the absolute truth is to understand Krishna. So the whole Varnashram institution is meant to lead one to become a Vaishnava. However, let's go back a bit. So the idea is that, yeah, when you become a Brahmana, you can study the Vedas. Most people, they're not qualified to study the Vedas. The Vaishyas and Kshatriyas may do so in a somewhat cursory manner. Only the Brahmanas are meant to do so in depth. Most of the Brahmanas, they're caught up on the Karmakanda level, but those who are really the best Brahmanas, they come to beyond Karmakanda, Purvamimamsa, they come to Uttaramimamsa, which means Brahma Sutras, Vedanta Sutra, and then they're interested in understanding the ultimate reality at the basis of everything, Brahma Gyan. So it's a long journey via the Varnashram system. If one executes one's duties properly in a certain ashram, then he'll be promoted in the next life, just like we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his youth, when an astrologer came. Of course, there may be many astrologers, or many brahmanas. Those brahmanas who have an education, they all have some training in all the Vedangas, or the six ancillary parts of the Vedic knowledge, so Jyotish, or what is nowadays translated as astrology, but it actually encompasses astronomy and astrology. And astrology means a lot more than simply making birth and marriage charts. But some may have been experts in that. There may have been specialists also. It's not that everyone's a specialist in everything. Just like we hear of Dronacharya as being an expert in Dhanurveda, the Upaveda, or ancillary Veda of about war, fighting. Literally, dhanus means bow. So, but we don't hear that he was expert in Jyotish or in Ayurveda. These are all different topics, or in Rig Veda or whatever. He was especially known. So anyway, an astrologer came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's door, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him to calculate what was I in my previous life. And the astrologer calculated and said, "Well, I see that all the universe has come from you. You're the Supreme Lord. You're the absolute truth. Everything rests in you." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You're not a very good astrologer. I happen to know that in my previous life I was a cowherd boy. And because I protected the cows, therefore in this life I could become a brahmana." So it's a charming little anecdote there. But the important point here for this discussion is that one who protects the cows or performs their duty as a vaishya, by that piety, they could become a brahmana in the next life. So it's a long, long journey to understand Krishna by the Varnashram system. Bahunam jananam ante gyanavang mang prapadyate. After many births, one who's seeking for knowledge comes to understand Vasudeva Sarvamiti and surrenders to Krishna. He understands Krishna is all in all and surrenders to him. Samahatma Sudurlabaha. Such a great soul is very rare. So the Varnashram system is meant for giving order to human society. It's a social system. All social systems are meant for giving order to human society. There is a system proposed called anarchy, which there are all kinds of different systems. There's nepotism, oligarchy, democracy, fascism, communism, socialism, all kinds of different systems that have been proposed. Varnashram is also a system of social order. Anarchy is a system without any social order. And that was actually the system in Satya Yuga, because there's no need for any system. That was the general system. People were just civilized, and they didn't have the exploitive tendency. But in the Treta Yuga, it became necessary to divide the varnas and ashrams. So a social system became necessary. So the social system given by Krishna, which is not only to regulate people in various ways, the different social systems regulate people in different ways so that they cooperate with each other and don't perform crimes against each other. And it's supposed to, the different social systems are supposed to regulate the tendency of people to mistreat each other and exploit each other. None of them can be successful without Vaishnavism. Even Varnashram, which decayed because people were not being trained as pure Vaishnavas. And it was, although it's meant to synthesize and harmonize people's activities and to cut out exploitation, it became exploited because the actual goal of it was not understood. So there's a lot of criticism in the world about the caste system. If you go to the West, people talk about India, they often say, caste system. It's the only thing they know about India. And that there are elephants walking around everywhere. That's what they think. Not considering that there's a lot of exploitation in the West also. Anyway, without Brahmanas being truly saintly, then even the Varnashram system will decay. And people can be truly saintly if they are Vaishnavas. So the Varnashram system is supposed to lead to Vaishnavism, but it keeps people in various statuses of life. That one who's a Vaishya, they have to act as a Vaishya. One who's a Brahmana, they're expected to act as. There are certain things that Brahmanas can't do. If they do, they cease to be a Brahmana. They can't take a salary from someone. For a Brahmana, that's considered to be the lowest possible thing you can do. Then you just cease to be a Brahmana. You can't drink wine. Then you're thrown out from Brahmana society. So like that, for a Shudra, we find in Uttara Ramayana that Rama kills a Shudra at the insistence of the demigods. Ram kills a Shudra who's trying to do austerities to go to heaven, which is highly controversial, because people say, well, what's wrong? He's doing it. But it's not suitable for a Shudra to do. He wasn't qualified for that. So it's according to the Varnashram system, he wasn't at the level of consciousness, being a Shudra, he wasn't fit for performing such austerities to go to heaven. So the Varnashram system is very rigid. But the status of a Vaishnava transcends that of Varnashram. And therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Nahang vipro na chanara patir na napi vaisho na shudra, etc. I am not a brahmana, kshatriya, vaisho, shudra, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. Kintu, projan, nikila, what is it? Dinikila paramanandam, gopi bhato padakamalaya dasu dasa anudasa. I identify myself only as a servant of the servant of he who is the husband of the gopis, who is always existing in transcendental bliss, namely Krishna. So that's the transcendental position, that's the position of the soul, that's the position that all the Shastra is meant to, or is aiming to, bring us toward. So Shukadeva was on that platform, therefore he didn't, for him to observe Varnashram rules would have been a disturbance to his total meditation on Krishna, full absorption in Krishna. They didn't serve any purpose for him to do so. He wasn't a standard preacher. Vamsidas Babaji also, he was completely detached from the world. The only social convention he followed was to wear a kopin. He could have gone naked, but he did wear a kopin. And the only other thing he did, which, and Gorky Shaw Das Babaji also, was to not associate with women at all. It's very interesting, isn't it? Although they don't follow anything else, any other social rules, but they neither of them had any association with women whatsoever. Otherwise, they just completely, they don't follow any social rules. It's not that they go around being antisocial or causing harm to others, but they just, they live separately from the world. They don't have friends in the normal sense. They don't interact with people in a normal way. Gorky Shaw was very impolite to everyone, practically. So, because they're totally on the Vaishnav platform, they impolite because he didn't want to be disturbed by all these materialistic people. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also, when he asked Ramananda Rai about sadhya sadhana tattva, what is the goal of life and how to attain it? Ramananda, his first reply was, Varnashramacharavata purushena parapuman vishnur aradhyate pantananya tatto shakaranam. Quote from the Vishnu Purana, which says that one should follow Varnashram, and in this way worship Vishnu. And in this way, there's no other cause of satisfying Vishnu, which is true at a certain level, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected eho bhajya. This is external. This is, Varnashram is a matter of one's particular position in the present life. It's nothing to do with the Atma, the actual person. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, we see he transgressed Varnashram in many ways by accepting Rupa and Sanatan, who were rejected from Brahmin society for having served Muslims. He accepted them as his principal followers. He accepted Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Mohammedan family, Muslim family, who, you know, Hindus, strict Hindus, wouldn't have anything to do with Muslims because they're contaminated. They eat cows. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu nevertheless accepted him. The standard orthodox Hindu idea is that if you're a Muslim, you're just out. We can't have anything to do with them. They're just, if someone's a Muslim, they can't be purified. Fairly recently, I was told that there was a whole group of Muslims in Haryana who wanted to become Hindus, to revert the whole group wanted to, but no one would accept them. So they had to remain Muslims. And even at when in 1947 in Kashmir, there were so many Muslims in Kashmir, they wanted to become Hindus again. And so Pandit Nehru asked the Shankaracharya at Varanasi, who said no. And now look what a big problem they have. So this rigidity, you can't become a Hindu. We can't accept you in the Varanasi. Even in Delhi, just recently, fairly recently, there was a young girl who, from a Muslim family, who wanted to be a devotee. But no one would marry her. So what can she do? No devotee wanted to marry her. Maybe they're afraid that the family would come and kill them both, which is possible. But this rigidity, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he rejected that on principle and in practice. Not fully though, because he himself accepted sannyas. And he observed the rules of the sannyas order very strictly, at least some of the rules. He was very austere. He didn't want to sleep on any bed. He only wanted to sleep on the floor. Sannyasis are not supposed to sleep on beds. He observed bathing three times a day, which many Brahmins did anyway, even non-sannyasis. Rigidly avoided associating with women and didn't allow his associates to do. So in many ways he was a typical sannyasi, although his chanting and dancing wasn't much appreciated by the sannyasis of Varanasi. So in that way he wasn't typical. So he accepted some parts of the Varnashram system. Even though he accepted Haridas as his great devotee and Sanatan, but they were living at Puri, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't try and force them to go in the Puri temple, Jagannath temple. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased when Sanatan Goswami came. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Sanatan. Sanatan was living close to, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living close to the temple, and in Gundicha, you can see it's close to the temple. And Haridas and Sanatan were living, that would be just in the area which is on the seashore where Haridas' samadhi is now. So that's a little distance. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Sanatan once to come and see him, send a message, come and see me. And it was midday in Jyeshta. You say Jyeshta in Hindi also. So, which is the hottest month of the year, midday. So there were two ways to come. One is from that beach area, past Swargadwara. What's the name of that area? I can't remember. Chatak Parvat, that area. Well, that's a little further out, between Swargadwara and Chatak Parvat. So there are two ways to come from that area to Gundicha. One is through the pathways of the town. There's that area, that Saptarishi area, through the pathways. Or you can go along the beach and then come inside. And Sanatan, being a renunciant, didn't wear shoes. So to go on the beach, the sandy beach, would be extremely hot. But Sanatan came via the beach, and his feet got completely blistered. It's like that hell it's described, where there's a copper plate which is heated from below, and there's the sun shining above. So it's extremely hot. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with that, and asked him, well, your feet are completely blistered from the terrible heat. Why didn't you come through the pathways in the shade. And Sanatan said, well, I might have, because he was considered untouchable, having been associated with Muslims. And Sanatan said, well, if I came on the pathway, then some of the priests of the temple might have touched me. With all the people coming and going, so I didn't want to do that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased, although he himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would personally not just touch Sanatan, he would embrace him every day. But he appreciated Sanatan's humility in considering himself untouchable according to the Varnashram system. So we can see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't disturb the caste system, which is the perversion of the Varnashram system, as it was practiced at that time, but he didn't uphold it on principle. Yeah, on principle, if you're a Vaishnava, you're a Vaishnava. Nothing to do with Varnashram. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentioned Varnashram as one of the obstacles for becoming a pure devotee, if you're attached to your Varnashram situation. But then we find that later Vaishnavas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, said that Varnashram is essential. People should follow this. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for Vaishnavas also, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, when Ramananda, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking, what, Eho Bhaja, Age Koho, and different quotations from scriptures about what is the goal of life, how to attain it. When Ramananda finally quoted one verse from Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted, Eho Hoi, okay, this is right. So that verse was, Gyane Prayasamuda Pasya Namanta Eva Jivanti Sanmukharitam Bhavadiya Vartam. Vartam sthane sthita shujigatang tanuvang mano bhir ye prayasha jita chitopya pitraishtilokyam, which means that giving up the endeavor to understand everything with our own puny intelligence, we should simply be a little humble and hear from devotees about Krishna. Remaining in our situation, we should dedicate ourselves, one should dedicate oneself in Krishna's service with mind, body, and in words. And in this way, one can conquer he who is unconquerable. So the important point that's often quoted here in this verse is sthane sthita. One should remain in one's position. Which, when that is quoted in the context of in which Shastra is traditionally quoted, means within Varnashrams. One should remain in one's situation. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted that, even though he himself took sannyas. He left his position. He took sannyas. For which he's still blamed by caste members of Bengali society. See what bad example. He said he had an elderly widowed mother and young wife, and he just left them all completely irresponsible, and so on. I don't know if in South India they blame Ramanuja in the same way. He had a young wife who he left to take sannyas. That Raghavendra Tirtha, he also took sannyas, and his wife committed suicide in distress. She threw herself in a well. One of the great acharyas of the Madhva Sampradaya. But the general prescription is one should remain within one's position. And that was Krishna's message to Arjuna also. That you do your duty as you're enjoined and surrender to me and serve me. Now, of course, Krishna says, Savadhaman Parityaja Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. Give up all other dharmas. But practically, Krishna wanted Arjuna to act as a kshatriya and serve him. That doesn't minimize the Savadhaman Parityaja verse, but it shows that pure devotion to Krishna doesn't have to mean giving up one's duty in this world. So what should you do? Should you be like Arjuna and serve Krishna by doing your work? As Bhaktivinoda, he also set the example of a householder, very responsible, government officer in the British government, which was becoming increasingly disliked in Bengal in particular at that time. But, you know, Thakur, who quoted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as saying, Nama shroy kari jotane tumi takaha apana kaje. Take shelter of the holy name and remain doing whatever your own particular work is. So which example do we follow? You may say, well, what's that got to do with us today anyway? I mean, because where's the Varnashram today? But the question does come up because Srila Prabhupada wanted to institute Varnashram. And when Srila Prabhupada was writing about this even before he came to the West, he was talking about he made a prospectus for Gita Nagari, a community in which this Varnashram would be followed. You've studied that, right? You've seen that? He writes about it in his earliest writings, how Varnashram is required, because, well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said about this. Now, Prabhupada was aiming at the West, the whole world, not just India. So he wanted to institute this. And in the beginning of Prabhupada's preaching in the West, he didn't introduce many rules and regulations. But later he spoke more about Varnashram. And toward the end of his sojourn in this world, he spoke about it more and more. And at one point, his disciples asked him, well, why Varnashram? Because it's not needed for Vaishnavas, is it? If you're a Vaishnav, what do you need Varnashram for? Varnashram is meant to lead you to the Vaishnav position, but if you're in the Vaishnava position, what need is that for Varnashram? And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm paraphrasing here, of course, that if they're Vaishnavas, then why do they fall? If you're actually a Vaishnava, like Shukadeva Goswami, he didn't need Varnashram. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't need Varnashram. But Shukadeva Goswami, he didn't fall down. But the sannyasis, Prabhupada saw, he was making them sannyasis. And they were falling down. And others were falling down. Others were leaving Vaishnavism. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce that among devotees, to taka upon the kaje, to namashraika, that we can do our work, we can act according to our level in this world, and at the same time take shelter of the holy name and the whole system of Vaishnavism, and gradually advance to the stage of pure devotional service. But there's always a tension between the two. Between Vaishnavas, they're sometimes or generally enjoined to follow Varnashram, but it is a material arrangement. It's an arrangement, it's a social arrangement for this world. It's the best arrangement, it's given by Krishna, but it is a social arrangement. And for Vaishnavas, what do you need all these things? Just like the sangskaras, they're alluded to in this verse, the reformatory ceremonies. Well, what do you need to do all this? You just chant Hare Krishna. And that's chanting Hare Krishna immediately takes you to the perfectional level. If you chant Hare Krishna, we really don't need to do anything else. In one sense, you could say, we don't even need to study Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. In one sense, of course we do. But if we're actually chanting Hare Krishna on the pure platform, then we don't need to study different shastras. Everything is meant to lead us toward chanting Hare Krishna. If we chant Hare Krishna, we don't need to wear clothes like Shukadeva Goswami. What should you wear, orange dress or white dress? Well, if you're a Vaishnava, you don't need to wear any dress at all, as you're completely situated on the spiritual platform. But as long as we're in this world, we have to interface with it. So the best system to follow is Krishna's Varnashram system. And even if we are highly elevated, to show others how to live in this world, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, while practicing Vaishnavism. That's another reason why Srila Prabhupada said that we should follow Varnashram. And Srila Prabhupada explained that one in the Varnashram system that we wish to establish, that one devotee does the work of a Shudra, one devotee does the work of a Kshatriya, one does the work of a Brahmana, but we understand they're all Vaishnavas, they're all beyond these designations, and any service to Krishna is transcendental. It's not that the one who's studying Shastra and giving class is necessarily better than someone who's working in the field and chanting Hare Krishna. Because ultimately Krishna accepts the attitude of the devotee. So there is this kind of tension between Varnashram and Vaishnavism, because in one sense you don't really need Varnashram, just chant Hare Krishna. And Varnashram, there are many rules to regulate one's life. Actually, in Vaishnavism, there are two. There are many rules. We don't follow many of them in the modern age, but there are many, many rules that are traditionally followed by Vaishnavas. Achaman, and how to perform Achaman, and Sandhya rites, and many different things. That even a generation ago, all Hindus followed such things. Nowadays, people don't know things like which direction to sleep in, which direction to eat in, and different times of the day, and different observances on different days of the week and different days of the month, and so many. There's the solar days of the week and then the lunar days of the month, and you don't shave on such and such a day, and so on and so on. So many rules to follow. But then if you're a Vaishnav, then the only real rule is Smartavya Satatang Vishnu. Always think of Vishnu. And if you want to add one more, Vismartavya Najata Chit, never forget him, which is the same rule. So this is the only, if you follow that, then there's no other, then you don't have to follow any other rule, like Shukadev or Vamsidas Babaji. But the point is we're not on that platform, and therefore we do need to follow rules. But there is this tension between, why should you follow this if you're a Vaishnava? Why should you follow all that? So there may be various reasons. One reason is to help us to come up to that level, because we're not on the level of Shukadev. Another is that we have to follow some social system, so better to follow Krishna's social system. And even though we may understand we don't really need to do all these things, still, to help others who are not on the level of being Vaishnavas, to help them, it's good for them to follow the Vedic social system. And also things like that, the Varnashram rules, which direction to face in when you're eating, that may affect the health also. There are many things, just like there are many subtle energies which you may not be aware of, magnetic energies and all this, by which it's better to face different directions for sleeping and eating and so on. There are different reasons for respecting the different demigods. You don't, just like if you're urinating or passing stool outside, which you're supposed to do actually, not inside, then one should cover one's head so that you're not exposed to the sun or the moon. That may be good for the health, maybe also so as not to disrespect the demigods of the sun and the moon. And so there are many different subtle considerations which theoretically we can give up as Vaishnavas, but how far we should follow them. We say, oh, we don't need to follow that. We're Vaishnavas. But then they are Shastric rules. So how much we should follow them, we should learn from our acharyas, which rules in particular we should follow, we should learn from our acharyas, because there are many rules and regulations for different, and in different parts of India even they may be separate or different, or it's quite a complex system. So, yeah, there's that tension between the two. And at the right now in our ISKCON society, there's a big hullabaloo. There's always, well, from time to time, various controversies flare up. The present one is over female Diksha gurus. According to the Varnashram system, women have a specific role, which is not one of leadership in human society. A guru is a social role, because you have to interact with people, as well as a spiritual role. From the spiritual platform, there should be no objection to women acting as gurus if they're spiritually advanced, because it's a spiritual function. Vaishnavi Diksha is actually called Vaishnavi Diksha. That doesn't mean that it's supposed to be given by women, it's just that Diksha is a feminine word, and the feminine form of the word Vaishnava is Vaishnavi. So, if you want to be more technically precise, instead of saying Vaishnava Diksha, we should say Vaishnavi Diksha. That's only according to Sanskrit rules. So, but some objection is there because of the social roles which women which traditionally follow, and which Srila Prabhupada also, he was strong on that. He didn't make women GBCs or women temple presidents, although he said that theoretically they could be. So there can be some apparent ambiguity there. He spoke against women being leadership positions. Traditionally in Varnashram society, Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram. Women in general don't become gurus. Although in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, women have been gurus. So there's like I said, there's this tension between Varnashram and Vaishnavism. So should women be gurus or not gurus? On the spiritual platform, there can be no objection, but as we have the order from our guru to establish Varnashram, my take on all of this is that we'd better establish Varnashram first. Prabhupada said women can be gurus. He said that. But he said in exceptional cases. So we didn't establish Varnashram, Prabhupada's major. Like, we want to jump up to the fully spiritual platform and say that, well, on the fully spiritual platform, anyone can do anything. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram. Let's do that first. And then we can see if there are any exceptions. That's my particular understanding. Otherwise, it's more like we want to make women gurus to be in line with the feminism of the modern world, in which there's no distinction between men and women. And women do all the same things as men, such as go and fight in wars, which is horrible. Why you should send women to fight wars? Men should be men and women should be women. The modern society is completely confused. It's so confused that men think they're women. It's quite common. They're homosexuals. And women think they're men. And it's just a big mess. So, concluding this class with some misogynistic remarks. Misogyny means hatred of women. So, according to feminists, both within ISKCON and outside, if you don't think that women can do everything or should do the same thing as men, then you hate them. Which is a strange understanding, but it is quite commonplace. We don't find here in the Bhagavatam that Kunti Devi, she said, "Hey, I'm a devotee, so give me a bow and arrow. I'm going to go and fight in the war also." Rukmini, she could drive the chariot. But we don't find that she was fighting. Krishna would regularly leave Dwaraka, and Rukmini didn't say, "Hey, give me some bows and arrows also." Krishna took Satyabhama once. That's described. But she wasn't fighting. Krishna took Satyabhama to fight. Where was that against? Banasura. That's in Kamrup, in what's now Assam. Actually, no, it's further up from Kamrup. What's the name of that place? It's mentioned Pragjyotishpur. Pragjyotishpur, that's the place of Banasura. So, yeah, let's get some sanity first in society and show people how to live like human beings. If we're too anxious to show ourselves to have transcended societal rules, in fact, we haven't come above them, but we're below them. We know it's not that we've gone above Varnashram, but we're lower than that. In our society, we don't. I mean, we can criticize Hindus and smarter brahmanas and all this kind of thing, but in traditional Hindu society and among smarter brahmanas, there's no divorce. There's no word in Sanskrit for divorce. They made up this word, vivaha vicheda. And the common word used in Indian languages for divorce is talak, which is a word imported from Islam, because there's no such concept. So, let's come to that, at least. Never mind things like passing things with your right hand instead of your left hand, you know, all these different rules of Varnashram, which people are considered civilized, if you follow all these little things. But there are some very important things, like no divorce, which we don't have in our society. Sorry to say, our society, ISKCON, we don't have families that are any more stable than in the Mlecha society. So let's establish that first, and then maybe we can think about some exceptions. But to have divorced people, let's not blame individuals, but to have an ethos. I'm sorry, I'll withdraw that because, you know. Well, everyone in divorces, each case blames the other. Each case says that I was good, but the other party was bad. So you don't really know. Srila Prabhupada writes that divorce is due to the women. It's right there in his Bhagavatam purport. Caused by women. So let's get some stability on the human platform. Varnashram is meant to bring us up to the human civilized platform. Let's get that together before we start talking about transcending it. Before we're talking about transcending Varnashram, let's come up to that level Of course, Vaishnava is intrinsically beyond that, but socially, we haven't come up to the civilized platform of Varnashram yet. So, like I said, I'll finish with some misogyny, as it's called. But Srila Prabhupada is very serious about establishing Varnashram. Very, very serious. So we should be also, if we are his followers. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions there? Is that my god sister, I think? Hare Krishna, respectful. Pranam.
How to understand we are still constant devotees, really? There is no way we can attain a higher stage if we can continue to make Maya infiltrate.
Well, shall I repeat that? She's saying that. Can you repeat it, and I'll repeat it so everyone else can hear it.
How to understand we are still
Kanishtha devotees?
There is no way we can attain a higher stage.
There's no way we can attain a higher stage.
If we continue to let Maya
infiltrate our movement. I've been thinking about this, and I thought of one verse which is, maybe to quote it, is shocking. And I can imagine that many devotees will get very upset. But here goes, it's right from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Acharya mata jay, she mata sha, tar agya langhi chali she to asha. Which means that the order of the acharya is the active principle in spiritual life. Those who flout his orders, they are useless. Srila Prabhupada quoted this in relation to the Gauriya Math, which deeply hurt his godbrothers. He said that they're useless because they didn't follow Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's open order to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So, we have an open order from Srila Prabhupada to establish Varnashram, but we're totally neglecting it within our society. So, where does that put us? How can we expect to get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada if we don't follow his orders? That's a very important order of his. 50% of my work, more than one of his disciples. We don't have a recording of Srila Prabhupada saying that, but more than one of his disciples, who we have no reason to think we're just making that up, have said that Srila Prabhupada said that 50% of my work is not done. So I've spoken about this several times, that if we don't adopt, well, this thing, I'm just saying this now, is that if we don't follow Srila Prabhupada's order, then we cut ourselves off to a large extent from his mercy. Not that we stop chanting Hare Krishna, but as Mataji Mahatma has said, then we may remain on the Kanishtha platform if we don't want to take up that challenge that Prabhupada gave us to establish this. So we have to, as long as we're in this world, we have to follow some social system. Whether it's, you know, democracy or fascism or whatever. So if we don't follow the social system of Varnashram that Srila Prabhupada enjoined us to establish, then this is what I've said several times, and then we're forced to go, we have no alternative but to plug into the social system that's all around us. And then we become dependent upon the materialists, institutions, economic institutions, educational institutions. We have to associate with them. We have to, and we imbibe their attitudes and values, because economics has the means of production, that's Karl Marx's big thing, the means of production has a profound influence on our whole outlook on values and the world. And so if we don't accept Krishna's social system, and we accept that of materialistic people, then we're going to become materialistic. We cannot but be influenced. It's the sangat sanjayate karma. One's desires are generated according to one's association. So that's one reason we can say. There'll always be anomalies within Vaishnava society in this world, because we are dealing with people in this world who are, by definition, we're in this world, apart from the few Paramahamsas like Srila Prabhupada who come to this world to pick us all up. But otherwise, we're in this world because Krishna Bhuli Se Jivan Adi Bahimuk. We're in this world since time immemorial, due to forgetting Krishna and being inimical toward his service. So there, Vaishnava society means that there'll always be people who are probably the majority who are not very advanced. So there will always be anomalies. But institutionalizing them, we're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to distinguish between that which is sat and that which is asat, that which is proper and that which is improper, to distinguish reality from illusion for the welfare of all, and guide people and tell them, hey, look, this is not proper, you shouldn't do that. So at least we should know what is right and what isn't right. But if we cut ourselves off from Prabhupada's full mercy, then we start to think in different ways. And if we associate with materialistic people, then we start to think in different ways. So it's a general question and a general answer. Chaitanya Shikshamrita. One verse Bhaktivinoda Thakur is quoting. The question may arise that since the practice of anashrama is a dilatory affair. Is that the word he uses? Why dilatory? Anyway, is a dilatory affair. Okay. What will one's duty be if one's vanashram duty conflicts with one's devotional practice?
The answer is that if one does not maintain and nourish the healthy condition of the body,
mind, society,
and the pursuit of self-realization,
how will it be possible? Yeah, you translate it into Indian English. How will it be possible
to cultivate the higher endeavor, devotional service,
if abandoning the Varnashram institution,
one acts independently,
then the demands of the body and mind
will cause one to become intoxicated
with material desire,
and no sign of devotion will manifest itself.
From Chaitanya Shikamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. From this, it seems that all the rules of Varnashram should be followed. Even if it's against Vaishnavism, Well, many of them, they are the same, just like all members of Varnashram society, whether they're Vaishnavas or Smartas or Shaivas or whatever they are. They rise early in the morning, bathe, brush their teeth. Traditionally, they pass stool in the morning, in Indian people, early in the morning. If you can't do it, you're not going to go to hell. Might have to go and see a doctor. And then they do some puja or some such activities. And there are many of the things are the same for everyone. Taking your main meal at midday. Brahmanas, they're supposed to take, no, they'll take once between sunset and sun, once between sunrise and sunset, and once between sunset and sunrise. So brahmanas, they'll generally be busy with different pujas and things up till midday, and then they'll take. When I joined the movement, I thought, this is too much. You get up at 4 o'clock, and they don't give you breakfast till 9 o'clock, whereas you're used to getting up, and within 20 minutes of getting up, you're eating, because in the wonderful country that I was raised in, you get up in the morning, and you do brush your teeth, you don't scrape your tongue. There's no question of taking a bath. And then you put on the same clothes that you wore the day before, and then you go and take breakfast. So I thought, 4-5 hours is a long time, but the brahmanas, they'll go right up till midday. So, you know, everyone does that. It's not just Vaishnava brahmanas. So everyone follows such rules. So, but some rules, they may not be, just like I said, have you seen that Kane, that Maharashtrian pundit, he translated into English the Dharma Shastras. He collected them from all over India. Have you seen that? There's like, if you put them all the books together, it's like one whole shelf. And the different Dharma Shastras. Dharma Shastra means the rules of Varnashram, all the intricate little rules that people follow. So he translated them all. And that some of them, some of the ones he could find and the ones that are extant. And so you can't, not everyone can follow everything. And even there are different smritis. The most famous Dharma Shastras are Manu Smriti, Parashuram Smriti, Yajnavalkya Smriti, and there are others, Vishnu Smriti, Narada Smriti, Haritha Smriti, like this. So it's not that you look through all the different books and then find something that you like and take it out. Like sometimes devotees, they find some quote from Prabhupada and which might contradict other things he said, and then they take that to be the rule because they like that. Just like one time I asked a devotee, "Okay, come on, what are you doing getting up at 8 o'clock in the morning?" He said, "Well, Prabhupada's father used to rise late." So it's not like that. You have to take. We have to take from our acharyas. And that's why Hari Bhakti Vilas was compiled for Vaishnavas. Because how do you live? Now a new sampradaya was started. What are the rules you follow? But even there in Hari Bhakti Vilas, at some point they say, do achaman. And they don't say how to do achaman, but it's just understood that you do achaman, that's all. We probably need an ISKCON smriti. And there may be different schools. I mean, we should face that. There will be different schools coming out who say different things. I mean, it's there everywhere. Already the Gaudiya Sampradaya is already in so many different branches. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he reformed it. Out of that came ISKCON. So far ISKCON's won, although different groups have come out of it. So when you're talking about following all the rules, well, there are many devotees who just don't like the idea of rules at all. And they say, well, you know, what does it matter? You know? And just like we have these kirtan melas, in which people come and no one asks you whether you chant 16 rounds or whether you follow the four regs. It doesn't matter. We're all Vaishnavas and we're just all chanting here together, and there's no emphasis put on following the regular sadhana system as given by Srila Prabhupada. It's just like people come to Bhagavad Saptahas in India and they listen morning and evening. They don't listen non-stop as Parikshit did, but morning and evening, or many times just in the evening, because they're busy sending the kids to school in the morning or watching the TV or whatever. And they come in the evenings and that's it, 7 days. And then they go back and their life goes on as usual. And no one's really trying to reform them or tell them, hey, look, if you want to become Krishna conscious, you've got to follow a bunch of rules and regulations. So in ISKCON now we have kirtan melas, in which there, if there's any speaking, it's on the glories of the holy name. And people like to think, well, that's great, we love it, it's fun, and that's all you have to do. But that's not what Prabhupada taught us. And we get many devotees who are really into kirtan when they feel like it. Not during the Brahma Muhurta, which is when Prabhupada told us to rise early every day in Brahma Muhurta and chant at that time. But they feel very spiritual much later in the day. So you may sound, well, this sounds very sarcastic, but there are devotees who say like that and feel like that. These are anomalies. But there are leaders who will indulge them and they'll make their own upper sampradayas. We shouldn't let them take over ISKCON. It's a big subject.
It is written that if there is a conflict.
If there's a conflict, yeah.
Then also we should follow that. It is written. What happens if there is a conflict?
What happens if there's a conflict? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you're not able to follow the Varnashram rule, then how can you follow the higher rule? Okay, we're going to have to
disturb the mind, body, and
the mind, body, and everything. Well, you may become disturbed. You may say, well, I don't become disturbed. Like I say, yeah, the Varnashram and Vaishnava Dharma, they both complement each other, but at some point there's also a tension between them. They largely go on together, but there can be a tension between them. That's solved to some degree by Gopal Bhatta Goswami in giving us the Satkriya Saradipika, in which rules for the different sanskars are given according to Vaishnava rules. So you don't have to do them according to smarter rules. So that's solved to some extent. But it is a big subject. And how much people can even follow the traditional Varnashram rules in the modern society. Srila Prabhupada writes in one book, throughout the Bhagavatam he's writing that we have to establish Varnashram. In one place very early in the Bhagavatam, in one of his purports, he said it's not possible. In the second canto, I believe, he says, it's not possible to institute all these things nowadays. Therefore, you have to chant Hare Krishna. So you may say, well, that's contradictory. Not exactly, but one statement qualifies or tempers another. That it would not be wise to try to institute every single little thing. Maybe some individuals will follow. But then again, if one becomes overly concerned with Varnashram rules, then that can be an obstacle in one's spiritual advancement also. With Varnashram considerations. I'm a Brahmana, this is a Shudra. So, it's another reason why we require gurus also to guide us through all this stuff in our own individual circumstances. Where to draw the line, yeah, that's always there, that consideration. It's very easy to draw the line if you just give people a whole bunch of rules which governs every situation in their life. It's like this Vastu Shastra is very popular, becoming very popular now, it's being revived. So there are rules, exactly, you know, where you should put the kitchen, which corner of the house and within the kitchen, where he should put the stove and where he should put the spoons and everything. In great detail it's given. So like that, for every aspect of life, so many details are given. So that's one way of solving all the confusion. But then we find that people are not prepared to follow all these rules. That whole system was set up with, one thing was with tremendous faith in Shastra, that we should follow it because it's in Shastra. And also with a lot of social pressure, that you have to do this. If you don't follow this, then you can be thrown out of Brahmin society or whatever. But then people became just so much into it, the rules and regulations, that there were rebellions against that, like Buddhism. Partially was a rebellion against the rigid Brahmanism, and within Vaishnav society also. The grip of the caste Goswamis among the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, that was, people sought relief from that in what came to be known as upper sampradayas. Tantrism, this left-wing tantrism, is a complete revolt against Vedic society. I'm not saying it's good, but if you try to control people too much, they may just say, forget the whole thing. So that consideration is there also, what you should do and what... Srila Prabhupada is very sensitive to this point about what you should do and what people are prepared to do. Actually, the disciples should be prepared just to follow what the guru says, finished. But Prabhupada is very much aware that many of his disciples weren't able to do that. And although you may say that sometimes people quote Prabhupada as chastising some of his disciples, but by the chastisement, you could understand that Prabhupada trusted them, that they trusted him, that they could take the chastisement. And the ones he was very soft with, well, maybe they were the ones that they weren't prepared to take so much shasan, anushasan, discipline from the guru, which is what a shishya is supposed to do. Shishya means one who accepts the shasan, the discipline of the guru, disciple. So, in understanding what Prabhupada did, we have to understand these points also. But then again, you may read more things into it. It's like I've been listening to these lectures and how the whole Mahayana came out of Buddhism, in which Buddha is said to have said certain things, and the Mahayana say, well, he said that, but he didn't really mean that. He had a different purpose in mind, but people weren't really ready. And then they make up their whole completely different philosophy, which has nothing to do with what Buddha said at all. So we have to understand the intention of the Acharya, but at the same time, not cheat, not with a cheating propensity. Understand the intention of the Acharya. There are many instances. Ramanuja, if we... we can learn so much about guru-disciple relationships in Vaishnavism by studying Ramanuja. Ramanuja. Very sweet. Very instructive. So there's one instruction, I don't remember, I believe it was Kuresh who was with him at that time, when one what was that? Ah, yeah, Kuresh was with Ramanuja, and Ramanuja came and bowed down before one of his gurus. Ramanuja had several gurus. He had mantra guru, and then different gurus taught him different things. So he came before one of his gurus, and he bowed down. And again, it was in the hot day on the hot sand. So he's bowing down. And actually, you're supposed to bow down until your guru tells you to get up, or you may bow down. And Kuresh was with him, And the Guru was there, and Ramanuja was there on the hot earth, and eventually Kurish said to, tell him to get up, he's lying there on the hot earth. And then Ramanuja was with a group of other of his disciples, Ramanuja's own disciples. So then this Guru told him to get up and said, yes, I was just seeing who is the actual disciple of Ramanuja that won't tolerate to see his guru put in such a difficult situation. He won't tolerate even his own guru putting him in that situation. So it's very subtle culture. Understanding the intention. What is the intention of the guru? Why did he do that? Why did he let Ramanuja suffer like that? Just to see the quality of his disciples. Hare Krishna, we'll finish there. Although I feel like I could go on all night, but we have to get up in the morning and do another day's service, so we'll finish there. Regulation, let's not... Another conflict, yeah. Shall we just go on talking all night? Or shall I think, well, I've got, and all of you have got service also. So early to bed, early to rise. Na tyashnatastu yogosti, na chaikandava nashnata. Na svapna shila. What's the rest of the verse? Didn't quote that one for a long time. Jagrato naiva charjana. I misread. One cannot properly execute yoga by eating too much, sleeping too much, eating too little, sleeping too little. So, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Oh, just here's another point. One of his disciples, Prabhupada, gave the name Varnashram Dharma. How about that? That just came to my mind. Varnashram Dharma Das.